My name is Yoga Dimachalamba. I'm the committee secretary. Okay, can you please drop the talk? Thank you. According to Rule 159 of the National Assembly Rules, if a chairperson is absent or unable to perform the functions of the chairperson, the committee must elect one of its members to be the acting chairperson. I will therefore call for nominations. Over to you, Mr. Mapanga.
I, Donald W.P. Mapanga, nominate the name of Honorable Fish Masalila to be the acting chair of this sitting. Thank you.
Thank you very much. A second. Over you to Dr. Michael. Thank you, Dr. Mansella. Are there any objections? There are no objections. Are there any further nominations? There are no further nominations. Mr. Matlalela, you are now the acting chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Health. You can take your seat. Thank you very much. Before we start, I think I should announce that it's the acting chair's birthday today.
No, thanks very much, honorable members, and good morning, everybody. Thank you for entrusting me with the short responsibility of the acting chair. I hope that the DA is not going to call it a coup. Because that's what they said about the Nelson Mandela Day. They said that's a daylight coup that has been conducted there. No, thanks very much. That's only a light end of No, thanks very much, honorable members. We are meeting to deal with the first quarter report of the department for this year. And then we are going to start by introducing ourselves and welcome all the guests that are here, that you are welcome. You are a passive participant in the meeting. Yours is to listen, there's nothing else. And then, as indicated, I am Fish Masalela. I'll be steering the ship until the end of the meeting. And then we'll quickly request members to just quickly introduce themselves.
Thank you, madam.
Good morning. My name is Rachel Evans. I'm a committee member.
morning, Chair, and the members and the staff members. My name is Mr. James.
Morning, everyone. I'm Donald W. Pinova, a member of this committee. Thank you. And thanks very much. I'll hand it over to the PG before I introduce the staff.
Morning, honorable members.
I'm Edwin Mabbitt, CFO of National Health. Good
morning, honourable members. I'm Violet Vivanier of Corporate Services at National Health.
Good morning, honourable members. I'm Andrew Perrin at BDG National Health.
No, thanks very much. We've got the staff that is accompanying, that is part of us, so it's already introduced, not sure that it did introduce himself, as the director of the committee, Mr. Lamba, then we've got the advisor on Womane, then we've got the Zubair with the researcher, then we've got Umbali, committee assistant, and then Tando is our Secretary from Study Group Agency. Can I ask the two guys to introduce themselves as well?
Good morning, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Yuna Fonseca from the Tobacco Institute.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm Mariela Baguasa from PNG.
No, thanks very much. We'll move to apologies. So as you see, I'm acting because the chair is not around. So the chair is attending a SARAC parliamentary forum in Johannesburg, dealing with health-related issues in that forum. So that's why it's not part of the meeting. I'm not sure whether it is.
Yes, Mr. Imam Sheikh is also attending the conference with the chair. Ms. Wilson is not well. Ms. Ndaba is attending classes. Dr. Tembe Kwayo, her flight was delayed. But those are the only apologies.
No, thanks very much. Honorable friends.
And also, we'll have a company, feminine companies.
Okay, thanks very much. Can we then move on to the next item, that's the presentation by the Department of Defense Quarter Report. I will hand it over to the teacher.
Thank you, honorable members. This is the first conscious report for 2018. If we go to our third slide, our land is now conscious of the mental subject and animal subject. Under the first program administration, key areas here are on audit. Even though we set a resume, we reported a performance that already has been underway. We didn't want to pronounce before the annual report is officially delivered. But as our last meeting, we didn't qualify, and in terms of the promises, the state has remained the same. Those problems that are unqualified are still unqualified. And those that are qualified are qualified. With regard to the second program, the first one on achieving then they've been deferred until they were finally approved in June for public comment. On the 21st of June, they were published for public comment, and members have been informed that on Friday there was a big consultative meeting that was convened by the Office of the President to consult different stakeholders on the two bills, the medical fees amendment bill and the NHI bill. The second one is about the service provider and the making of contracts. The tenders were published and the call for bids has been closed, and Dr. Pili will talk to that and explain what the next steps are between now and the end of the financial year. For e-health strategy, the strategy has been reviewed. We now have started the process of consultation, but it didn't happen in the first quarter. We will be finalizing in the second quarter the consultation, and we will come back to the committee with the revised strategy. For the beneficiary registry, we have 2,994 activities that are implementing our health patient registration system. We're just short of this office. So there's been a slight delay because we've had an industrial auction at National Department of Health, and it has affected most of the activities in our reporting. Obviously, we will improve it as a quarter. And the population register, our annual figure as at end of this financial year, our target is that we can register 5 million South Africans. Meaning, for purposes of preparation for NHI, we need 5 million people that are on the system that can be followed as to where they are, what systems that they are. Our performance is at 24,000, but we are hoping that by the end of the financial year, it's 24 million, but by the end of the financial year, it will be 35 million. What we've done for this, honorable members, is that we've worked with a different funding study. We've got data from LEMA, from Department of Basic Education. We are busy including data from SASA so that the areas that the minister prioritized for people with disabilities and the those who get services are SASA beneficiaries, because they've been prioritized, will be able to target them as well. So in the second quarter, we also share the latest data of what the total numbers are. The next one is about the surveillance. There were supposed to be 3,625 facilities that report on whether there's stock availability or not. And based on the reporting, we can tell whether they can monitor stock or not. It's our early warning system. So in the first quarter, it was supposed to be 3,500. I think we were on target with respect to that. As part of the medicine, we were supposed to improve availability by ensuring that when people access medicine, they don't have to stand in long queues. So we introduced CCMDD, which is the chronic care medicine distribution system. And that system allows people to collect their receipts not from the clinic. They can always go to a pharmacy or to a doctor just to collect their medicine. So far, there are about 2 million patients who should have been enrolled. And I think we of the problems of resistance, we're also monitoring this. And we're starting MOUs with NHLS and NICT. They have the draft documents at the moment that will be signed off as soon as the traditional practice. South Africa, we now have a registrar that has been appointed. He's supposed to drive the work of the council. And so far we have a draft bill which must go for public comment, but it will go through the cabinet process. At this stage it is with the state law advisors who are awaiting their opinion. The next is about the regulation of the price of medicine. The Medicines Act provides for regulation of medicine through the single exit price. And the manner in which it's done is that we also have to look at the adjustment based on the currency fluctuation. So the pricing committee has come up with a draft and recommendation on single exit price adjustment, and the notice has been signed by the minister and it will be gazetted. The next one is about quality and getting feedback from users of services, because in most instances you need to know whether users of services are happy with the services that are getting. So annual target is that 1,500 primary healthcare facilities must conduct these surveys and establish whether people are happy with the service they get or not, and if they are not, we then say what interventions are needed. So we've been supporting 8 provincial departments to conduct these, and we're supposed to be supporting 8. And so far, support has been rendered to 4, because most of them are preparing for those studies. But others are on track to conduct the studies, because we want these to be annual and not just once off. The next is about having an integrated monitoring evaluation plan that can help us see whether we're on track with regard to our health outcomes. Just to make an assessment, we said we started with the NHI evaluation. So the field work has started, data has been collected from all the 10 NHI pilot sites. What we've been doing appraisals and reviews, but this one in particular is about doing an evaluation to measure impact, whether was any difference made in those pilot sites. So not all planned feedback activities have been completed, and delays have been due to provincial research committees in 5 provinces delayed approval. So the people who are conducting research cannot start until they get ethics approval in those facilities, in those provinces. So areas of improvement, so the provincial consultative meetings have been scheduled. In fact, we finished a big workshop with regard to this, so this has already happened in this quarter, in the second quarter. The second one about evaluation of the fieldwork and data collection. The timelines of the project have been revised because we're waiting for provincial health research committee. And the outcome of this will be a discussion at the meeting. We planned a big research meeting where the results are going to be shared in September. I think the 13th and 14th of September we'll be discussing the results. So as a first quarter we have not finished, but now the work is done and the results will be shared. To address the industrial strike, we've engaged, because the industrial strike has disrupted services and our work. So what we've done, we've engaged a mediator and the bargaining council has convened us two ministers, the Minister of Public Works and the Minister of Health, have also met because we are tenants and Public Works is the landlord. So the minister has agreed that we might have to relocate if the conditions in the building do not improve. So we will await this upcoming, according to the public health plan, the relocation may actually start in October. So they are currently reviewing alternative accommodation for program 3 HIV and AIDS to implement combination prevention and treatment. The total number of people remaining on ARV, our annual target is 5 million, and quarter one is supposed to be 4.4 million, and we are at 4.2 million, so we shot up 175,000 people. So in this quarter, I think we will catch up at the numbers to improve. For the second one, the screening and testing campaign, it could not be launched because the minister wanted to it was planned and it had to be postponed because there was a funeral of a diplomat, so the whole thing was postponed completely. So it has affected our first quarter reporting, but what we did, we then decided to just continue with the provinces. So meaning it wasn't launched for 9 years, so it was affected by the campaign. For the medical needs circumstances, the data, this data will only be completed in the quarter. So for this quarter, we've underperformed in both instances for those people in the testing campaign, but we started the work even without the launch. Meaning the campaign has started even without the official launch. And the medical needs circumstances, it's a DHI data today. We will get it in the second quarter. With regard to TB, we updated our data. We're supposed to have 15,000 people, missing people identified, and we've actually had far more than that when we looked at the data in the second quarter. The reporting mechanism, we had to start, because this is a new indicator, to set up the system for purposes of reporting, look at the data sets and so on. So I will send the format on how the reporting is done. So yesterday when I looked at the data, it was 5,000 missing people that have been able to track down and identify for the two quarters, not for the first quarter. The first quarter we spent time setting up the reporting mechanism. So underside mortality is supposed to be less than 33,000 lives worth. So the study protocol is supposed to be developed and we're supposed to have a field work. So the protocol for the EPI coverage has been done and for the survey, and we'll be conducting the survey. Implementation plan has been developed as well for the draft plan, and in the second process, quarter and third quarter implementation. So areas of improvement, like I explained, that we've already started collecting data, the tool has been developed. We now have 45,000 people now that we've identified that were missing, that are supposed to be treated for TB. We launched the first quarter target of 15,000. The national screening test and campaign, and this is we're already doing in our provinces. But the idea here was to be even outside the department, in the external. So we'll probably have to work with the stakeholders, civil society, and private sector. SANOC is currently a vehicle that we are using to reach out to other partners outside the department. Program for primary health care. Under program 4, we were supposed to eliminate malaria in South Africa. And according to our annual target, we were supposed to have had a strategic plan, looked at the gaps, where the problems are. From our assessment, the provinces that are doing well with regard to malaria is Mpumalanga and KZN. We're struggling with Limpopo. And this is where we're going to be spending most of the time, particularly now for the malaria season kicks in. But the two provinces that are doing well so far is Mpumalanga and KZN. We're seeing very good progress. With regard to the joint external evaluation, we've come up with a work plan and we're setting up a technical working group to look at the packaging and that is identified. The district government and improvement of management. Initially, we plan to develop 10 district structures to meet minimum requirements. And the tool that is developed is supposed to be the basis on which we assess whether districts are performing or not, because they are key to the delivery of primary health care. So the tool has been developed, stakeholders will still be consulted. We will be meeting as a technical NAC in this quarter to approve and use this tool to assess the district. The next is about the primary healthcare committee. Each clinic must have a committee that is functional. And those committees are supposed to be the ones that do some level of governance in a clinic. And we wanted to establish what the level of performance of each clinic is. And we've been able to assess about 2,208 of these clinics. So we still have to do 1,192. The reason being is those committees are dysfunctional, we need to set them up, we need to follow up. So we can say what the status is, but it doesn't say they are functional. But at least we know where they exist, where they don't exist, and how regular they meet and what do they do when they meet and so on and what training they would require. Quality of services at primary health care through the agency, we have established the status of only 2,208, meaning for 2,208 we know what the status is. We must still establish the status of 1,192, and we're hoping that by the end of this financial they will have a status determination of all the clinics and be able to say these are clinics, these are not, these are far from reaching the ideal clinic system. Accessibility of primary health care for people with disabilities, there are about 1,978 of these facilities that are accessible to people with physical disabilities. Our target for the quarter was 1,000. The quality of services at district hospitals, the target here was that we wanted all district hospitals to have some form of ID status, so we developed a tool to address them. And so far we have finished the framework, we'll be assessing them. But prior to that, we visited 50 hospitals in 8 provinces. And the idea was to also establish what are the what we wanted to do is per quarter we'll be sitting with our provincial colleagues sit with them, see of those 50 hospitals what how do we redirect resources so that the things that we've identified can be resolved. So we've got a report for with recommendations of what needs to be done. But we wanted to also indulge the committee, particularly with regard to this first group of hospitals. In that it is our considered opinion that the grants that have been allocated because we're going to the new 10 and part appropriation that the allocation being redirected to fix these problems that we've identified. So we will be having a technical meeting to discuss those reports and sign an agreement with the provinces that these are the things that we think they should focus on. The experience we had, honourable members, and it's probably, you know, a song that we've repeated. In Limpopo, for instance, we in 2012, when we identified problems, we bought chillers, boilers, autoclaves for Limpopo for all 38 hospitals. When we did this visit this time around, some of them are not functional because they have not been maintained. So we try to look at what is the method that can be used, where we can improve. If we intervene and when we withdraw, how do we sustain that? Because even with the 50, we move in, intervene, when we withdraw, things will also revert back to the original state. And we'd like to find a way, whether are the grants a way to respond so that we withhold if they don't continue to implement things that we've identified to be, you know, problems. And that might be an option, but we've discussed with Treasury to consider that as a measure that should be used because it's an area of difficulty. So for the hospitals, this is where we are in check. Environmental health, our target was to implement a plan. The plan has been developed. In fact, in September, we're going to be meeting with all environmental health officers in the country to go through the plan. But also, we're working with the 21 municipalities. The Minister of COPTA has identified 57 municipalities. So we've taken these plans and we're working with COPTA. And to say these are the things that you'd like to see as health in this municipality. So this is an integrated plan that involves different departments, but led by court. The district mental health services, 15 district mental health teams were supposed to be established in each province. So far, even the three that we thought would be established in the third quarter have not been established. But what we've done on our part, and maybe Dr. Pini will talk to this, we've created a fund whereby if in a district they do not appoint teams, we will appoint them to intervene in particular districts. So we're hoping that that could be the intervention for now. The provision of rehabilitation services, our target have two multidisciplinary rehabilitation teams established for the year. So to improve the program, like we said, that the facility managers must not only be the ones driving the quality agenda, the district management is must also be involved. So we've been working with the Office of Health Standards Compliance to also use their tools, but it shouldn't just be a facility manager because they need the support from the district. And if the district is weak, then they can't get support. So the last program is the Constitutional Health Services Network. And the first one is about the number of central hospitals with the proper organizational structures. Like I said, we visited all of them, and the outcome is that we've got a proposal on what needs to be done. We've put the budget, but we would like to implement with the support and agreement from the province. And it's anything from agreeing on the number of people who must be, you know, the minimum number, meaning the hospital should run with a certain number of people. If those people are not employed, if vacancy rates are high, it's a problem. We've gone to look at, you know, the casualties. Why are they overburdened? We've looked at the number of beds, why are there shortages, the referral pathways. So we've picked up all of those, we've come up with plans for the 50 hospitals, and we're in a stage where we are just about to implement, and we'll do another 50. So we'll just keep them in batches of 50 each. And we'll share the report. I think we asked Mr. Carter to share the report with you. The quality now, and then the national cost standard, we are going to use this to implement the cost standard. Oncology and obstetric services, the team that is established, led by Mr. Ambantili, has gone out on tender with contracting providers to render these services to reduce the cost. For emergency medical services, the non-provincial departments are supposed to be having plans to comply with the regulations that were published. So we came up to check to see whether are they complying or not, and what the status is. So we set up in each province for the committee, but to try and facilitate information exchange, we appoint people from one province to support another, so that a province that is well performing can support a province that is underperforming. So we'll see whether that strategy works, but they will use the checklist that we developed to us. The infrastructure was supposed to build 400 facilities complying with norms and standards, and 50 of them in quarter one. So far, the additional infrastructure assessment has been conducted by the team that is led by each DDG, meaning each DDG chose a province and they are supporting a province. And we have focused on that. Hence, I say we've got 50 hospitals. The 50 hospitals also come from this proposal that we must also meet the standard. The clinics and community health centers was supposed to have clinics constructed and revitalized. For our quarter, we met this target. And for the hospitals, I think we have not met the target. I think it's only two. And for those that must be refurbished, for the first quarter, we are supposed to be 25. We've met the target. And for NHI pilot sites, we've also met the target. For the workforce, we've got a draft of 800 regulations in terms of the National Health Service. One may ask why we need HR regulations when we have the Public Service Act. The purpose of the regulation
is to do what I described earlier, that no health facility must be without the critical mass of health workers that are needed. Meaning if there are vacancies, you can't have a clinic with a shortage of nurses and doctors, meaning there must be the very minimum that is available. Now, because we keep on raising this to say that this must be the very minimum, we still have vacancies, shortages, some facilities are oversupplied, others are undersupplied. Just as an example, with this UCT hospital project, we went to one facility where there's an oversupply of doctors. When we went to the next facility, we didn't have doctors. So we said that it can't be. So we said there must be a norm, but we want that regulated. So we relied on the National Health Act so that it can be enforced, and it can't just be done administratively. So there's a planning, the intent and concept, we've allocated all of them, and even those who just qualified mid-year. The latest report is that there are some who finished in May. We want specific dates. We don't allocate people on monthly basis, and we'd like to also bring it to the attention of people who do concept and internship, that when you qualify in December, you'll be placed at the beginning of the year. If you qualify between January and May, you'll be allocated mid-year. So what happens with people who finish in February, they want to be allocated immediately. So it's very disruptive. You can't plan like that. At least 2 years, you know, intake is how the system should be working. I think we've been a bit flexible because some have not passed in November, they repeat the term, they finish in February and they want to start immediately. So we have to sort of, we've been accommodative, but we're going to be very strict in saying that you either finish in November, you start in January. If you didn't, then you start in mid-year. So then we have two cycles. So this is how the system will work from now onwards. we've done site visits to universities, and we've been working with the students themselves, as well as the medical association. With regard to the strategy, our strategy is due for review. We've had a stakeholder consultation, and in this quarter, we will be finalizing the new strategy and present it. The next about the Mandela Fidel Castro, all preparations were done in the first quarter. We have received 700 students back from Cuba. They are allocated to all our 8 medical schools to finish their last week of training. Now the difference with this program this time around is that historically we are receiving about 180 to 100 students annually. It is for the first time that we receive 700 all at once. Next year we'll receive about 1,000. So it's a huge number for students who come back all at once. But what we did with the universities, all 8 universities, we signed an MOU with them and agreed that each university must make the platform for finalization of their training. So what has happened for all the students, they have to sort out accommodation, sort out their training, expand the training platform. So we have, and I must say, the deputy minister has been the one driving this program. So we are now preparing for the next intake of 1,000 students who will be coming back next year. So the cycle is that we've got 2,100 South African students who would qualify this year. In addition, we have the 700 that are finishing their training. Next year we've got 1,000 that are coming back. So these are the numbers that we are planning around. So in total, in the system, we have 2,000 students who are now going to do the internship, and others who are now midway with the internship, and some who have not finished their community service. And in addition, we also have students who are coming back from Cuba, about 1,000. So this is the update of the Cuban students. We also have a number of managers who need to be trained, and we developed a hub which should be accessed by TEC managers. So far, the poor performance in our services. It should have been 30 hospitals and 300 primary health care managers that have been trained through this hub information system for coaching and mentoring. And so far we only have 21 hospital managers, 2 CEOs and 19 hospital management teams, and only 9 PhD managers. So there's very, very poor. We need to investigate why it's such poor uptake, training coverage, why is it this poor? The next is about making education and training. 9 out of 17 remaining colleges are supposed to customize their curriculum for the new 3-year diploma that has been introduced. The new courses are going to commence in 2019. And so far, 5 out of 9 remaining nursing colleges have been supported to customize their programs so that they can be ready for 2019. Long-term standards. For clinical training platforms, we've got the draft of these national standards for clinical training platforms that have been developed. Backlog on blood alcohol. Our annual target is 100% for third quarter. It's supposed to be 5%, so our performance is only 80%, so we've not reached the target. But for the toxicology test, we are on target. So areas where we think there should be improvement is just to make sure that beyond the 50 facilities that we move 50 by 50, we want to take them in groups of 50 and ensure that their infrastructure meets normal standards. For obstetric services and oncology, the trends are in that it's the work that the feeding will talk to, and the blood alcohol, the gas leak. We actually had the gas leak at the forensic lab in Joburg and this for the health regulation and compliance management. The first is about Natisa. The public hearings in the province. We are still busy with the NHLS because it has gone to an SCOP. The government monitoring, biennial government report has been produced. In quarter two, we are not ready in the third quarter. But because it's an annual target, we are on track. The first one will be ready in the third semester. The handbook has been developed also, and we will be training all the board members for all our entities
to comply, including the professional security. So with regards to finances, I'll do the summary and ask the CFO to do the details. As of 30 June, our expenditure target was supposed to be 5%. The total as of June was 11.4 billion, and our percentage spend is 24.66. There are three areas of underperformance. The first one is administration, and the explanation will be provided later. The second is the one on energy, which I feel will explain, because the project only started late, the major disruption, and the whole procurement traffic overall, I think it explains that. And primary health care, all our members, Ms. Hunter is also. We had to reassign her to go to Northwest as the administrator. So what we have done is that we sort of had to reorganize the functions in the department to work within budget. So we've just reorganized the department to share the functions and the activities within the set budget. So over to the CFO.
Thank you, Chair Members. So, the DG had explained the program variances on the goods and services, on the economic classification. Mainly, our underspend is on goods and services and on capital, which relates, I think, to the implementation of our indirect grant HI, which I'll explain when I get to the indirect grant expenditure. Administration is at 16%. If you look at the reasons for deviations, we still have to implement all the salary notch increments back to April in the second quarter. We've had some earmarked funds on Psyca and Medico Legal. Medico Legal, the tender is also out to the public. Psyca, we've approved the business plans for the provinces. An expenditure will commence the second quarter for this. The biggest issue, I think, on the business services for program one is the issue of this lease agreement with for Civitas Building of 24 million. We have essentially going to keep the funds to ensure we pay for the outstanding repairs by Public Works. Until such time, we're happy with the building, as DJ has explained. On capital assets, there is a transversal agreement with Microsoft, and we have to pay by the second quarter. We have actually negotiated the quantum of the contract downwards in terms of what licenses we need, and hopefully that will give us some small savings. On program two, it's a lower expenditure, basically business service and capital, and relate directly to the NHI indirect grant. We expenditures is low at the end of the first quarter. We do have some commitments, and I'll address those commitments in a while. On compensation for program two, we have to receive the Durka invoices for the other attachés, which will process as soon as we receive them. On goods and services, we do have annual contributions to WHO payable in the fourth quarter, which is a seasonal thing. The Vodacom, there was some billing error that we've rectified, and we have now commenced paying them the correct funds. There is a contract for software license for the medical stock system in process of being finalized. We in fact already sat as a adjudication committee in the last month, and we awarded all these contracts through the commons and through the CETA process, and same for the SLA between us and CETA. On transfers, some sort of agreements have to be signed. We have had issues with the AG in terms of all of the financial statements from institutions, and we need to make sure those statements are available before we transfer funds. Capital assets, we have, as I said, gone through an adjudication process, and the orders will be placed. The issue of the labour that we just mentioned ensure some segregation of duty within the unit of logistics. Program 3 is basically on target 25%, and you will see that most of their funds come from transfer payments, which is 25.43%. Typically, we transfer once per quarter, once per month, in some instances, and we should be able to catch up towards the end of the financial year. This program essentially is on target. The biggest issue there is on the goods and services, and there's some manuals on the retail booklet that needs to pay in the next quarter. Program 4 is at 17%. As we explained, the reallocation of the TDG for that program. Essentially, there's a number of goods and services payments in process on the malaria health promotion flip charts and other health promotion materials. The new allocation, it was an earmarked allocation from Treasury for mental health. It's still in the planning phase, and there might be a risk of us not being able to spend the total funds in this instance. Again, these are transfers. We just need to finalize all the survey agreements and receive all the finance statements from institutions and NGOs before we're able to transfer those funds out. Program 5, essentially at 24%, mostly again, our biggest issue there is the transfer payments, but this one, we look at the various explanations. Essentially, we're looking at our implementing agents, DBSA Kuga, to also submit invoices. We have done the prepayments to them, but we have to reconcile the actual expenditure before we actually are able to reflect it in our books. And that has also been affected directly by our later action in terms of finance stock and the reconcile back. Program 6 is 25%. This program is essentially on target. We do have stuff out there that is still part of our establishment, and as soon as they are able to gather their own expenditure, moving to the transfer phase. We are also purchasing a X-ray machine for the NBOD. We've gone to tender. It takes fourth quarter, but I think we were able to expedite that to at least the end of the second or early in the third quarter to make the appointment of the service provider for that X-ray machine. Our grants, essentially, Chair, we're sitting at 23%, again, 23.7% of last financial year. The overall spending is still within the norm of 25%, so there is no risk of real underspending. There might be issues between these grants. The Rewrite grant, for instance, is at 18.3%. HPB is at 2.2%, but obviously that will pick up with the seasonal nature of the grant. And the other three bigger grants are more or less in line, and we're happy that expenditure should be able to pick up. So just to recap, the grant summary at 23%. As I said, the Rewrite at 18.3 and 2.2. If we look at the position per grant per province, on the professional training grant, most provinces are on track, except Mpumalanga and Northern Cape for now. The issues at Gauteng, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape are various, but essentially what we found in some provinces is that some provinces developed their budget very late in the first quarter. Which means they're not able to reflect all the expenditure. And there is also an issue of some alignment of the business plan to BAS. So we do monitor provinces to make sure that they allocate for their low budgets according to what's in the business plan. National Tourism Service Grant, again this grant as the first one is supplementary to the equitable share of the provinces. The lowest spend currently in the Northwest. It's an issue of them not being able to also load their budget before the end of the first quarter, which means that they couldn't collect all the expenditure. But we have got an intervention there with the administrator to improve the issue there. Some other provinces have sunshine or underspent. There is some delays in the payment of invoices, especially to NHLS and some operating leases. But we do think that the accruals or the potential accruals that the province had at the end of the financial year will be settled before the end of the second quarter. The HIV and TB grants, community services grants at 24%. Western Cape and Northwest, together with Northern Cape, is the slowest spend at the moment. Northwest, we know the issue again, is of the intervention and the issues that they had up to now. Western Cape is awaiting some delivery of ARVs and condoms, and there's also a slight delay in the payment of NHS for them to be able to reconcile accruals together with first quarter expenditure. Other provinces seem to be on track. Most of them have settled their accruals, especially in Gauteng, there's been a drive to all outstanding expenditures. Rebate grant at 18%. Again, you know, the provinces that are slow, same as last year essentially, being Malanga. But we have found that Northern Cape has got a severe pressure at the moment, they're sitting at 49.4%. They were not able to access the incentive from last financial year, and they're sitting under severe pressure, and we have to see how to address it from our inherent grant. But essentially, the contractors have expedited the delivery. That's what we're getting from the province, which means they'll have to go back, and if need be, they'll have to see how to either delay payments, or they will have to reprioritize within their own equitable share funding for these projects. There's always the issue of slow procurement of medical equipment and health technology in the provinces. We have a number of transversal contracts that are due for award through our testing process. This has been quite slow, and provinces struggle to put their own contracts in place for a number of reasons in terms of setting up specifications, getting proper evaluations, etc. HPV grant at 2.2% is very slow. But as you know, that the most of the expenditure realizes during the end of quarter two and quarter four. This has now changed from an inherent grant to a direct grant. The provinces are responsible for that. We're also sitting with a number of expenditure items that was with the National Department and now it has to be paid by the provincial departments, and we need to find a way of sorting that in terms of the equivalent commitments made in the previous cycle. The NHI data grant is the one that is extremely slow at the moment. Our expenditure on the rebate component or infrastructure component is 72 million, 8%, but we've got quite a bit of commitment there. Of 302 million, which is lined with the implementing agents. Then what we term the non-personal services, also very low. The CCMDB, I must say, in the last 6 weeks, we have processed close to 220 million rand worth of invoice for orders, and we expect that to increase quite considerably, to an extent that we might even face potential overexpend on this item. Other three components, it's progressing in the sense that there has been quite a few commitments to do peer reviews at provinces, and our commitments close to 2 million. The other three items are moving slow. As we explained, the patient information systems and the medical stock surveillance systems, we have made some awards in the last quarter, but it was also delayed through a process through CIPA and the G-commerce, and we hope to have resolved this, but quite a bit of invoices or orders have been placed on those two items. On the personal services, the only movement at the moment is on the contract review part of the contracting model. Essentially, we're transferring this out to provinces to allow them to pay for contracts that they've concluded with health practitioners. The other four items are still out on tender. They have closed, and there's now a process of answering all queries from the tenderers, and we hope to do evaluation, I would think, by the middle of September, have an award done. Again, Chair, this has been constrained quite a bit by our labour action, as we do need people to actually be able to receive documents, stamp them, schedule them, and there's been some delays in that regard. Yeah, I think that's essentially the financial position. Thank you.
Chair, in conclusion, I just wanted to also confirm that the team that are led by each DDG to different provinces to solve the problems in hospitals. Some of the reports that they consider, besides the development of tools that we came up with, they take the report of the committee, but in addition they take the report of the Office of Health and Compliance. The base on which they spend time with facility managers and doctors and the various teams in the hospital. So what we requested Mr. Carter to do is to share this report. I don't know if it has reached your office. The report of the 50 hospitals.
No, thanks very much for the report of the hospitals before it was held by the committee secretary. We as members were not very much. No, thanks very much. Before we engage into the presentation, we'll request that we break for 10 minutes because we didn't have breakfast already. I'm told it is already.
Thank you.
Milano. Είναι φουμένη για weekend.
Thank you.
kept yourself and not your kids in the house for a while. This is good heaven. That's the marriage plan. Can we have a bishop? No, correct. Honorable members. Let's resume our business. We've received the presentation by the PG and the team. Now it's our opportunity to make comments, clarify certain questions on the presentation by the teacher. That's the opportunity to start. Who would want to start? If there's none, we close the meeting. Honorable Jafka, James, Maricela, Konzo, and Mapama, in that order.
Thanks, Chair. Only two questions for me, Chair. I would like to ask from the department led by the DG, how well do they think the department is trying, if it really does, to address the issue of the shortage of the doctors, specifically in hospitals, and how are they planning to retain those that are presently rendering their service. Secondly, I would ask the department to update us on the rollout of the ideal clinic, and most importantly, the support that the department is giving to the ideal clinics to conform to the standards. And the third one will be, I would like to know how is the department assessing the primary health care committees, and is there any training that is given to the committees immediately after they've been elected to serve in the committees? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think I should start with first, we welcome the presentation. The program two, as much as the department has tried to explain the understanding, I still feel there's a real deal of understanding, continuation of this understanding of this program. And hopefully the department, with all the explanations, I need to implement it so that this program doesn't understand program two. Program three, I'll continue to hammer the importance of fast tracking the infrastructure spending on ideal clinics. This is the only place where our people are forced to go, the clinics, nowhere else. When I first started to the hospital or regional hospital, they will have to go to the clinic. So if these clinics are not sorted out, primary health care has to be sorted out. Staff-wise, the nurses, in fact, the complete the whole doctors, you know, the cleaners, the material, everything, our people's equipment. If primary health care is not sorted out, the poor are going to continue to suffer in a shelter, and it's just not fair. That includes emergency care in the primary health care, because this is where our poor, the poor are forced to go. They have nowhere else to go. And I think I'm going to repeat this again, that the department really needs to focus on primary health care and make sure that the infrastructure, the maintenance of infrastructure, the staff component inside, the doctors, they need care to me. You don't have to carry the short staff, because then we bring it out and then we have disasters on consumer satisfaction survey. You know, people are saying because this primary health care is just not being focused on, and I think that I'm really pleading with the department, please sort out primary health care. If you do not sort it out, our people are going to suffer forever. This is our fourth year now, it's our fifth year. We're still saying the same thing and saying that, because I know that I won't be saying that next year when I'm gone. So I just want to again say this important. One of my other problems within the department is how is it dealing with teen pregnancy? Because this has come up again. And Chair, for you, you know, health education is so important. It cannot be a once-off thing that in December 1. It's a day, world is day, and that's it. It has to be a continuation of education of our youth, and we know how our youth are on social media. We know how to get not unless to go and preach to them. I don't think they will listen now. The social media, where they are attached on, we've got to find a way to get to them. These are tomorrow's leaders. And we need to protect them with information. We all know that information is power, and if we do not empower our communities, we are still going to struggle with bed of disease, because the person has a high blood pressure, it's not really supposed to be using salt too much. They have to avoid, there are a number of this education should be happening at the clinics, it should be happening at the churches. We need people to speak to them, not the minister alone in the TV. We need people to speak to people. We need people that are going to sit down with our burden of disease and explain to our people, what are you eating, what are your meals, how your meals look like. Because it's not one glass fits all. Some use a lot of that. How can they balance within their means to live a healthy lifestyle? For them to be able to live long, that 68 years can happen. But that means there's got to be some kind of communication. Mass communication of people, they've got to learn, they've got to know, because if they have this information, we don't need to nanny them, they know how to go about it. And health education, please, this has to happen. Any detection of cancer, if they don't know, nobody has to know. But if you educate our people, and these are signs that should rush and go and see if you have cancer or not. If it's not there, how do they know? How will they ever know? Let's empower this community. It remains my frustration that I think, Chair, I hope in the next term, this will be really be implemented, because it is not happening. It's not there. And we need to see it. We need to continue to give us people, the power to look after themselves, not somebody else, but them. But with the right information. The maintenance of clinic, they're very slow. We really need to maintain them. The hospital, the clinics, and the work that we really need to do. And again, the clinic. Clinic committees, do we really empower them also on what's expected of them? Because it is boring to be elected a committee member and to sit there and you don't really know what exactly you should be doing. doing things that you are not supposed to do. But is there, the guidelines so that they feel they want to be there, because I know our community is going to assist us, because with them we can also do better. In them, we can ask of our educating our burden of duty. They can do that work. And the tracking of our TB, increasing of our TB patients. And I'm not sure whether Chair, through you, DG, is still happening the work that when one family member has been diagnosed with TB, that the family also is taken in and be tested. I'm not sure whether that's still at all be called into the clinic to come and be tested, but I can tell you we have you know, one family, a mom also, the daughter had MDR, and the mom also, because she's prepared for the daughter, also had to, you know, and the family, and how does that matter? Is it out there that nurses should know in the clinics that the family should come or what? I'm just have, like, some clarity on that. Yeah, I think that's very much about it.
Next.
Thank you, Chair. There is an overall under expenditure in all the programs. Could you explain to us why under expenditure? I would understand if you say you ran out of money, you've overspent, but you did get money and you can't spend it when there is so much to do with the money. Please explain to us. And the procurement system, management system, doesn't seem to be working in the health system or in government in general. And I think as long as the procurement managers are not part of the decision-making group and they are just implementers, procurement system won't work because they develop these contradictions. But if they are upgraded into the decision-making sector, I think it may work. But as it is now, it doesn't matter with what goodwill, it won't work. And there is this chronic shortage of health practitioners, professionals, and the Treasury has recommended that they will not be able to fill all the vacant posts. How is it going to work when there is this chronic shortage? And another thing is, are we ever going to manage to produce our own professionals instead of sending people out to go and train and things like that? Why don't we try to concentrate on doing it internally and make it work? Well, we do understand other obligations, but it's better to concentrate on doing it internally than what? Yeah, I don't want to go into some other things that I want to go into, but should we not? Because we do need to expand if we are going to cope with the NHR. And how many? It looks like there's a contradiction that is developing between the GPs that you're contracting and there is some stoppage somewhere. Can you explain what is happening there, whether you're succeeding or the whole thing is unraveling? And lastly, there are many questions. Can you appraise us about the department update on the rollout of IDR clinics? So we get an idea. We were looking at for them, and we struggled to find them. We were out for them. So can you appraise us what is going on? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And program 2, excuse me,
mention has been made about the underspending, but what I would like to know is if we say we have spent 80.2% underspending in that program, especially in the goods, you know, a mention has been made about the goods and services, but underspending on other programs, there hasn't been a mention of where the actual underspending was. Maybe we could be specific as to maybe some kind of consistency. If we have spoken about understanding and have given the percentage as to how much has been underspent, and maybe we do that on the other programs as well. As a matter of consistency. In as far as the HIV and AIDS program, in program number 3, I say that on this program there appears to be the spending on this program appears to be on track, but bullet number 3 tells us that there is low spending. And I think the understanding is huge for us not to actually request the department to talk to this understanding, because it's only 1.7 million spent against the projected 36 million, a variance of 34.4 million. Maybe we should talk to that one as well. excuse me. What is being done to improve the turnaround time for blood alcohol and toxicology tests? Facilities. PHC facilities. Are there any programs to upskill the members? That has been mentioned already. I'm sure the department is going to talk about. How about updating the committee on the health professionals for the school health programs? And in program 3 we talk condoms have been supplied for a period under discussion. Why has there been issues of aligning the drawing schedules for this program and program number 5? Operational expenditure under program 2 was 74 million, only 4.4%. Maybe I should leave that, because the under expenditure overall response is going to be given by the department. So maybe I should skip that and talk about the 1,192 clinics or clinic committees that have yet to be assessed. Its functionality thereof, and for those that haven't been assessed yet, maybe the department could talk to implications thereof. I want to talk to hospital facilities, the understaff of doctors and things that, well, that has been mentioned already. Maybe Chair, I should land there.
Thanks, Chair. Mine are clarity to this question. On our, I mean, 2 weeks back, we conducted the oversight visit at KZN under the Umkhonyovu district municipality. And there we discovered that the number of structures which were built by using the NHI fund, they don't provide the shelter for the patient. When we tried to engage the people whom we thought are responsible, it looked like they had no answers. So I want to find out who's responsibility. It's the department, it's the provincial or the national department of health. And how is the department going to rectify such? Then the other clarification question is on page 17. It has been stated that the malaria program quota performance review process was planned to commence in July 2018. However, that did not happen. When I checked the reason for deviation, it is stated that the review process was scheduled to July due to non-availability of the external reviews of the World Health Organization. So I get confused there. It seems like there are confusion with regards to. Can you please clarify? The last one, Chair. Can I have a clarity? It's on page 23. Can I have a clarity on why both the oncology and obstetric services improvement plan have not been drafted yet? And when will they be drafted and presented to the portfolio committee? I thank you, Chair.
No, thanks very much, Honourable Members. Very quickly to also have applied, just to, on program 4, DG, just to check what has been found to be the cause of your book for not performing as expected on malaria. What is it that they are not doing that they're supposed to be doing, and what intervention? I hear that you are saying you're focusing on it, but practically, what intervention are you putting in place to make sure that they check up the malaria control? I hear that Malanga and Kate attended doing very well. Though my only challenge with that is that because I'm staying in a malaria area. I remember last year there was an outbreak of malaria in the area where I was staying. And when you trace it, it's because there's never been spread. Never. And they started acting when there was a death only them that they jumped and started praying and praying around, and they don't seem to accept the extent to which where there's an error that is infected Marada, they don't become reactive, but they become proactive and be able to pray in advance. Not to wait until they see the incident. And then when they see the incident, it's only then that they react. Well, that's what I observed in that village. It's a bigger village, but it was just in that space where, in that smaller section where one stayed, where that happened. And when people got sick and were sitting there, it's only then that they started praying. And I've been asking myself for the past 2-3 years, I've never seen them praying. And I was wondering, and I've seen there's a lot of mosquitoes. I said, maybe those mosquitoes are not dangerous, that's why they're not praying. But it was after them there was death that they started then reacting, which was a worrying factor for me. That applies to push for threats as well. They started reacting when there was incidents of death as well. I don't know what is the reason for them to behave in that, because it's known that from next month they should start spraying, because you have those incidents starting September, October, November, But they will wait until this sickness and death before they react. And then the other issue, just to check the, I see that you are saying 20 clinics and community centers have been constructed or revitalized within a quarter. I keep on asking this question because I always tend to get a response when I don't get the practical response. I always get the theoretical one. I always ask that, is it possible to be given a list? And I've never seen those lists. You recall that even last year I've been asking. I still ask. Is it possible to be given a list of these 20 in this quarter that has been constructed and those that have been revitalized? Revitalized. That applies to the hospital as well. So that we are in the same understanding, so that we are able to understand where are they located, and then be able to claim the victory. Because we are unable to claim some of these victories because we don't know them. We can't go and speak about numbers to communities. When you go to community, you must say you revitalize or build this clinic, this CHC, this hospital. You can't say, build 20. You see? It becomes a story for them. That's one. Two, I'm raising this in the context that we still have, we were at Mkomojo. What we saw at Mkomojo is not pleasing, especially with clinics. They're still very old clinics built in the 50s and 60s, and the communities almost 10 times. And that clinic was built for a very small community. And all of them, they're almost of the same size. And there's nothing that is being done. I know it's a provincial matter, but national can't fold its arms and say, no, we can't intervene in that situation. We went to one clinic in Dumba. That thing's not a clinic. It was a four-room house that was built in 1950, in the 1950s. fact, I'm sure it was built in the 1940s, that forum, because it was converted into a clinic in the 1950s. The small forum, the nurses, they consult in the consulting room. One patient is sitting on the other side, the other one sitting on the other side. It's not private, it's not. We've got children here, you've got TB patients here, you've got pregnant women here, in the same space. Now, it doesn't make good. And when you go and ask the MEC, they said, no, my understanding that clinic was long closed. And actually, it's not in the rural area, what maybe you will say is far away, it's in Kere. Where they spend most of their time. You see? That's one of the challenges. So you've got those, I've seen one clinic in my constituency in Glasgow. It's a hall, teaching. A hall, a community hall. Yeah. The clinic in my constituency. I was shocked when during constituency. Just a hall, open space, a community meets there as well, there's community meetings there and all those things. It's a clinic. You see? I don't understand. I mean, the priorities for provinces seems to be upside down. They don't understand that primary health care is priority. Because Mpumalanga is busy demolishing hospitals, building new ones, and what. We have got areas that doesn't have proper primary health facilities. It doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense. Yeah. But I don't know what can we do about it, but something has to be done about it. I mean, this thing. Because we're not going to achieve this thing that we want to achieve as a nation. If things are done in the manner that we well, coming to the budget, that's one question, CFO. There is something that you on program 5, you didn't explain, because it's one of the lowest in terms of compensation. On the others, you explain why it is lowest. I'm not sure whether it equal applies to program 5. So it's one of the lowest. But the others that are closer, you have said something about them. But this one, you said nothing about it. I'm not sure whether it's automatically that you should read it in the same way like the rest. And then on conditional grant, the health professional training. The issue of procurement of medical, in fact, not just here, including the infrastructure, including the health, the revitalization card. The issue of delay in the procurement of medical equipment, is it because they are not there in the market or what? What's the problem? Because the challenge of medical equipment in the health facilities, money is there, but is it delay in the procurement? Where lies the problem? Is it because they are not in the market? This equipment, hence therefore the process of procurement then becomes a problem. Because in some instances you are told, no, you can't repair this machine because the parts are in Germany. That's what in one instance we were told in one instance. No, the parts have to be ordered in Germany, so it will take about long period of time they come to South Africa. is that the reason the procurement is because the equipment are not in South Africa, are not easily available, and therefore procuring them takes a long time, generally. And then on the HIV AIDS, I'm not sure it's a mistake, CFO, because you say the major contributors to underspending, they are saying Free State, but I say Free State is almost 25%. And then you are saying Western Cape, which is correct, and then Northwest, it's overspending in any way. But they're saying they are contributing and spending. Because Northwest and the HIV and AIDS is sitting at 26.8%. Unless I'm reading it wrong. No, I'm not reading it wrong. No, I'm reading it wrong. We now realize it. And then, lastly, there is this issue that I just wanted to emphasize, raising the issue that some members were raising around the ideal clinic, the non-spending, the low spending of that infrastructure related matter, while on the other hand, you go to provinces, the condition of the infrastructure, not at the request standard, they tell you we don't have the money, we don't have the budget, so we can't do anything about it. Because all of them are complaining about budget. Even when they call them in June, if you recall, they're all raising the issue of budgets around infrastructure. There's a challenge. But they've got some of this ideal clinic funding that is not spending at the required level. Is there any reason, and what intervention are you putting in place to make sure that you speed up the process? Dr. Maisela, he repeated it again today. He said, no, we're looking for this ideal clinic. we're still struggling to find them. But we did find them, although they are not at the diamond, Dr. Maisela. They're not at the diamond stage or the platinum stage, but we did find them at the silver, at the gold level. but what I want to raise is the whole question of the extent to which the problem to understanding vis-a-vis our preparations to lay a foundation for the implementation of the NHR. Because if that program is understanding, it then exposes us that we are not ready and we are not. If we can get money tomorrow, what are we going to do with the money if we can't spend what we have now? You see? I'm not sure what really is the bottleneck and the problem. I was shocked when we were concluding in Commonwealth, I know it's just a general remark, we thought this is a pilot, we told this is a pilot site of the NHI, but we have been looking for NHI throughout, we could not see one. And when I went out, we were closing, and the district manager comes to me and said, hey, I'm still looking for that NHI. because it raises the issue that Mapanga raised, that there are
project that NHI Abriel said to be NHI project related, which were installed there without shelters, and Mukumundo is very cold. Patients are expected to wait in the coldness. At least Dr. Play, you saw one, which that one was better, basically, compared to the one we saw when you were there. No, that one was a little bit better, the one in that village there, that we first got lost before we arrived. And the first one where we started, it was the worst one. But at least there was commitment from KZN that they are going to put some money to quickly put the shelter. What they were saying, no, the challenge is that they could not put the shelters because National said, no, this is our project. You can't do anything about it. Until a period of time, 2 years. Then it's after 2 years, then you can, I'm not sure that after 2 years it gets handed over to the provincial. My understanding is that even if it's built by National, as soon as it's completed, it must be handed over to the province. But the story that we get now, this project, this building, we said, don't touch it for a period of 2 years. It is now, we've now completed the 2 years, it's now that we're going to put the shelter. Because we're told not to intervene. I don't understand it, how that system works. That's what we're told. And there was, what was it, Shrin?
Yeah.
She never disputed that. She never disputed that. So we took it that it is true. That no, that's what happened. And you say no, there was no consultation. The structure was just put without even them being involved, being consulted. They don't know how the design was done and all of those things. So everything was just imposed on them. And that is it. So that's why it is in the state and the condition of the peace, because they were not involved in the whole thing. Which was not a very good spirit for me in terms of cooperative governance and as if it's another, it's worse because the same department. Mm-hmm. I would understand if they said, no, that thing was brought by Public Works. No, the thing, no, health did it, National Department. No, thanks very much, Tichy. You can come in and provide whatsoever response that you think is necessary.
Okay. Thank you, honorable members. I've brought the copies of the report. You will leave them behind. But as I respond, I'll also refer to the report from some of the questions. And I apologize that you can get the report to me. And I just wanted to start first by responding to the primary health care and the clinics, the honorable members. From some of the reports that you've shared with us, when you do your oversight work, the complaints that you get from users of services, including the pictures, I get pictures all the time, somebody is in casualty, they've been lying in a bed, like they arrived today, 6 o'clock, the following day, 6 o'clock, nobody has touched them. So I get those all the time. So when we started this project, one of the things that we said we wanted to do is to understand why is this happening? Why is it that people go to a hospital, they're involved in a car accident, they are on a stretcher, it's 24 hours later, nobody has touched it. Why, what is the problem? So when we picked up these hospitals, our entry point was casualty, because we wanted to know what is happening in casualty. And Chair, the outcome of that, the first response, of course, from the doctors, nurses, CEO, was that one, they don't have enough beds. In housing, for instance, the solution was that they would buy, I don't know, lazy boys. get this. And our view was that, but how is this going to help? Because it's not, it's about the fact that it's not been seen by someone. So that you can make a decision on whether you send them back home, you admit them, or you interview. So that was the issue. We then also asked that, what is this problem with the baby? In some of the facilities, our report is summarized, but you get a detailed test. We try to really put as much detail as possible. In one facility, for instance, the issue was they don't have enough beds because the people who are admitted, some people are admitted for a number of days and weeks. Why? Because theater is closed. So you've got two theaters closed, and when you go to investigate, but why is theater closed? Because, you know, either they don't have enough staff, or there's one, or some are waiting for a CT scan. So you say, but why on a bed? So there's a total, I don't know how to describe it. You know, with health workers, they are really trying their best, but it is not dysfunctional. So we went back to say, okay, if it's a problem of beds, well, how do we then decide that this person is admitted, this one is referred, because others actually walk directly from a clinic, like you are saying. So there's a problem with the referral system. So what the thing is that people go to a clinic, they don't get services, they go to the hospital. So it's in our report, we pick that up as well. So I'm just saying, honorable members, what we decided to do, just using the 50 hospitals. Meaning, we're using the 50 hospitals, but we're responding downwards and upwards. Because if the clinics are dysfunctional, the hospitals are going to go to the services. So we then decided that even as we respond, for some of the facilities, equipment is broken, then people will stay in those beds. For others, there's a shortage. I mean, you find this person, there are probably two or three doing their best. They just can't cope. So you say you can't flog the same horse and expect them to do so that was the reality that we saw in the experience. So Chair, when we went to this facility, we did not start in the provincial office, we went straight to the facilities to first hear from the users but also from the health workers. So we're now going to be sitting in the provinces and say these are things that need to be done. And our appeal here, Chair, that because we've got the grants that you are referring to, and he sort of held back again, and I know maybe it's wrong, with the expenditure, we want, with the permission of Parliament, we invite Treasurer to redirect these funds to respond to this problem. This is how we want to respond. But we don't want to, in the, you know, the manner in which you described it earlier, we don't want to go and do it for a profit. We want to move in the work together. What we've seen in Limpopo was that when a national and children's and autoclaves and so on, in 2012, when you go back, they're not maintained. So the attitude, and I think we've seen that with mobiles also, the mobile clinics that were bought about 88 of them, I hope the number is correct. Some are parked, they are never used. The attitude is that they are national. So there's this national, provincial attitude. Anything from national, they don't touch. So clearly, that problem must be resolved. Because when we meet in National Health Council, this agreement that you are going to do certain things together. But I guess after that, nothing happens. Or so there's an organizational culture problem. that we have to work on. I thought I needed to say that. So this report would probably be an entry point to do exactly that. I want to just share two examples. You might have done the oversight, but you probably are aware of this interesting. I'm aware that there is no other oversight. We've got those two hospitals, state of the art, beautiful, Tromsberg and Lady Brent. When we spent time in Tromsberg, I think that day there were only two patients for the whole trip. And we went back, sat with colleagues and said, but it can't be. Tromsberg is on your way to Goldsberg for most of the day. And our question was, the community, you know the community in that area, the population is 7,000. You can't build that big hospital for 7,000 people. It cannot be. So we said, okay, it's there, it exists, it's a structure, it has to be used. So we made the proposal that for people who travel by car on their way to Cape Town, the report we got is that in Goldsberg there are a lot of accidents in the area. So what happened is that when there are accidents in Goldsberg, the people are ferried to Kimberley, and it's 4 hours from Goldsberg to Kimberley. But if they were to be transferred from Goldsberg to Dromsberg, it would only take an hour. So we said, okay, maybe from now on we should rather use Tromsberg as an emergency and trauma center. And then we met with the university, they agreed, and it will also be used as a training ground for emergency services, so that it's not only used, but it benefits the community and the population in general in Tristate. We did the same in Lady Pride. When we went to Lady Pride, equally, state of the art, beautiful facility, and I utilized. We then asked, because apparently most of the people who use the Lady Pride are from Lesotho. And now Lesotho, the government of Lesotho works with the private sector to have a state of the art themselves. Now this one is under, you know, it's a long story. So we looked at what are those services that people from Lady Pride and surrounding areas can benefit from. So we've identified three specific areas. It's orthopedics, because if you go to Bethlehem, for instance, it's overbedded. It is bursting at its seams. So we are saying we've got a facility that is overbedded, and we've got one beautiful facility that's under each other. So what we are doing, we are reorganizing services so that we said even if they can use Lady Brand to offload other facilities with good patient transport systems, that will make sure people get it. So the big problem, at least with those two facilities, they're not able to attract specialists. But they've got beautiful theatres, they've got... So we say you don't have to attract all specialists that you want, just in those areas where you can use this for training but also organize facilities. So we then had the bad one, I know that you're talking shelter. But the one that has been dramatic, I'm still traumatized. The Ngweleza. This is water in a facility at casualty. If you see workers with brooms sweeping water. So this is, and when we contacted the province, I can show you the communication. We said we know about this. Chair, this was the response. No, we know about this. So our attitude was that, okay, if they know all along, no, we know where we are. So, but as we are talking, health records will be improved. Sweeping water, pouring. So if the health records are sweeping water and patients are not being seen, and the response was, we know about this. So our attitude was that we are going to redirect the money and fix the problem. But we wanted to just use this as a test to give you this planning. We'll discuss the plans jointly with the province. We'll share the these same plans with the provincial legislature as well. And we want this closely and tightly monitored as an example. We want to do that for clinics, we want to do that for hospitals. It's going to be a very aggressive program that we're going to be following. We are getting cooperation from some of the facilities. I think in Limpopo, maybe just inform you how we've divided ourselves. Dr. Pile is leading the KZN team. Ms. Remy is leading the Limpopo team. CFO, we asked him to just do two facilities in Eastern Cape and two in Northern Cape, because we're not going to do those two meetings, but we didn't want to leave them out completely. And Dr. Jorgen Pile is doing housing, and I have taken fixed specifically because I was worried about these two facilities where we spent so much money, but we are also following up on Arlington. Because it's also another state of the art facility. But in Gauteng, you might have seen the headline that tells them Mohorani is a state of the art, but we have steps here in the 6 steps. I'm showing you that state of the art, beautiful facility does not mean everything. And this is what we want to do. So we also have Mpumalanga led by Dr. Andrew. So we sort of allocated us those facilities. We then took every employee at National and said, for the next couple of months, if you're going to write the guideline, you write the guideline in an aeroplane or somewhere whilst providing support. So this will then have to be, meaning we'll be on the ground all the time helping. Now, because Ms. Hunter has been made administrator for Northwest, What we do, we work with her to support her in Northwest. For instance, we'll go in some of the facilities. In Northwest, the main issue at the moment is the nursing colleges. That must be completed so that they are ready for training. So it's how we're supporting her, and some of the theaters that can be used in that delay. So we've gone to every facility, so but we think what is when you go to a hospital, you also look at the feeder clinic. Because if a hospital is dysfunctional, you want to understand what's happening to the clinic. Then it tells you. So where will we be working is that as you respond here, you also respond to the surrounding clinic. So that's how we're going to be dealing with the primary health care. If it's an infrastructure issue, we redirect the funds. So at the moment, check. You see that in some areas we will have under expenditure. I had deliberately not signed off on the rewrite because I said unless the rewrite money can be shown to respond, then I don't see why we should be signing off. So we're redirecting funds to go to those areas where we've identified problems. So I thought I needed to just say that as a preamble. With regard to shortage of doctors, honorable member, and how we retain them, what we've done in working with the provinces and treasurer, we did an analysis of HR across the country with a breakdown of the provinces. There are provinces that are really, really bleeding in terms of HR. Housing is the worst. Housing is in the need. And we wanted to work because Treasury has put a cap on COE. The reason being, and the logic is that they're saying you're already at 65% of your HR budget or 70%. It leaves very little money for activity. Otherwise, you have money to pay salaries, but you don't have money to buy equipment, buy medicine, and so on. So we then proposed that perhaps in this contracting model that Dr. Pili is talking about, you should be able to bring in some of the employees through that system to render services, meaning you create another vehicle of bringing the health back forth so that you don't lose them, but you keep them and they continue to render services. And maybe when he responds, he will just share how that is going to work. And honorable member, this is sort of the proposal, because I gave you the numbers, that it's got 2,000, it's got 30, the system, it's got 700 and 1,000. So if you have a system that takes up on annual basis, we've got over 8,000 people who do consent, meaning the health system, and these are health professionals, the health system must absorb 8,000 people annually. And this is probably what we have to work out, to say how do we do that in this policy environment of saying COE must be kept true and the DPSA policy on overtime. So those are the issues that we are grappling with. But we are putting a proposal together. The one on the ideal clinic, honorable members, like I said, we have assigned a clinic. We said a clinic must have the following things. When we go, I think in all our reports, the first thing that comes out in most facilities, infrastructure programs, it's standard, it's across board. Whether shelter, as you said it, shelter for patients, whether exposed to the sun or rain, it's a common problem. Space. What we picked up, even in this instance, is that there's a serious space problem. Space for fires, space for health workers to assess patients, but even space for just where patients must sit. OPD is a general problem. So we've seen. So this is why we've argued. We've argued and repeated here, I say to Treasury and respectfully, that perhaps we shouldn't be talking about building new hospitals, but use the money to fix what exists. It's what we say repeatedly, and I think that must be echoed. I say it, I've gone hoarse just saying the same thing. The committee, honorable members, what we did, the clinic committee, if you read the National Health Act, the MEC is supposed to appoint the committee. We said we're going to assess them ourselves. We want to see those committees, when are they appointed, when do they meet, what do they do when they meet. So we are going to take over and train them, meaning our intervention is that we'll work with the provinces, but if we don't get response, we will be more aggressive than we are. At the moment, we ask, we write a letter, we wait for a response, so we've heard you that it's not enough to write and ask. If you have to train them, call them, train them, monitor and so on. So we have a list of who they are, where they are. We've assessed all of them. We're supposed to have a big, we actually planned provincial training programs to kickstart in July. For each province, we'll have all their clinic committees trained starting from July. So the person who has been heading is Ms. Hunter. So Mr. Morawan will be driving this agenda. For the understanding, like I said, some understanding, it's a couple of things. One understanding, one reason is that I've deliberately, and I probably it's wrong to say that, but deliberately held back some of the signing off because we want to redirect these funds to business. And you'll see with our costing, because we did a costing, we are just saying that where some of the money must come from. But we don't want to just impose. We have a formal meeting with the provinces. we have shared these reports, we want them to formally adopt and agree in a formal meeting, so that as we implement, we are all in agreement. So this is where we are. We always sign MOUs, SLAs, but it's another paper exercise. So this one, we want to go beyond that. The first check of the dispute and emergency care, Chair, we set up special committees, but the way we are doing the ideal committee, we take people in one district from a different province to work. We do what I call cross-pollination. We take one committee, works with another group. We thought it will facilitate learning. You know, those who do well will share experiences and they help each other. When we started, honorable members, maybe we were too trusting. When we started this whole project, when we sent a team to do the educational work, what they do, and I don't know, I wish I could put it in so true, it would sound better, that was a magazine that you know next door. What they do, they go and borrow equipment and stuff, and then when you come, they look good. And then when you leave, they take it away. So the diamond and the, you know, the state has educated, it's actually not true. Because basically people have cheated. So we had whistleblowers who alerted us that actually this is happening. You think you are scoring people, they borrowed next door. So we want to change that behavior. In fact, we want to explain to them that this exercise is meant to help them, so that they get equipment, they get resources. It's not, they shouldn't go and borrow because they want to look good, and then afterwards they are without resources. So that was the aim. The one on teen pregnancy, honorable member, honorable James, what? Maybe we should look at where we're spending the money. We have, You may be aware that they want a love life and soul city. They're supposed to be the ones helping us educate the youth about teenage pregnancy. Because they came up with things like buddies and, you know, those are innovative ideas of communicating with teenagers. Just love life alone spends $4.7 million on an annual basis. Perhaps we need to review and look at whether does it deliver what you want. So city, we spend $3.2 million. I mean, just in total, it's about, and then last lifeline, it's $23.2 million. Just these grants alone, it's almost $100 million annually. So this must help us solve this problem. But in addition, we've got the new initiative that the minister launched. It's called She Conquers. And the donors fund development aid, they've invested about $3 billion to empower young women to take charge of their lives and so on and empower them. So it's run parallel with the international law called She Decides. And we're hoping that will help us. But it won't work if it's just a health development program. It has to be all of society response, basic education, health, and, you know, so that is a much broader dialogue, a dialogue about youth and young women, and even younger men. The next one about after the teenage pregnancy, I take your comment about PILA. We will sort of ask the minister to appear more and
the people on the ground.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. We will get maybe also get others to talk more about the issue. Infrastructure and maintenance in both hospitals is low. Yes. Like I said, we just held back because we want to redirect funds to do exactly exactly that. We will be sharing the guidelines for the committees. Maybe let me raise this issue of the cleaning committees and the hospital boards. It's an issue that we probably just have to regulate somehow and give guidance on as national. It's a huge gap. People who participate in as cleaning committees or hospital boards, some of them say they have to use their own money to travel. So, you know, there are inconsistencies. If you are on a board of a corporate or a board of an entity, you get reimbursed. Here, people who do community work have to pay for transport from their money and their pocket. So we were saying maybe we might look at just the basic things that they should have for that oversight role, especially if they have to travel and so on. But it's always encouraging that if we always encourage them, it must be people from community, so that the community take responsibility, but also for their facility, and they can also look after their facility. And maybe it's those kind of contributions that we need. The TB patients, honorable members, you may recall that we had to come up with a policy about community health workers. That policy has been approved. The matter was the subject of a bargaining chamber. It was tabled. We've agreed. We've come up with certain terms, honorable members, that for anybody to be a community health worker, because we want them to visit households, to do exactly what you said, honorable member. They must have matric, they must have been trained. In fact, training has started. It was supposed to start in July. We'll just tell you how the training program is going. We're supposed to assess all of them. For those who do not have matric, we said there was a recognition of prior learning. And what we are saying is that there are certain people who have been doing community health work for years, but they don't have matric. Now, our problem is that if they have to write a report, if they don't have the skills to write a report, our condition of saying matric is because there are certain things they must do. So we've identified the kind of things like the requirements for a community health work. Our target was that we would have, just for this financial year, there'll be about 20,000 of them that are formalized. And then the subsequent year will be 20,000. In fact, we need about 40,000. But we've recognized that not all 40,000 will be needed to do the work immediately, because some of them are not going to go to suburbs. We want to target those areas of need first, so that we can respond appropriately. So this work we've already done, and it will include not only TB but other conditions and other kind of support. The shortage of post and the caving of HR is what I described earlier. The Treasury has expressed why we have to have that cap, but at the same time we've also seen what it does in terms of services. So we're looking at a model on how we break the balance, and I'll ask Dr. Pide to just say how the contracting is going to help us achieve that, and he'll say how far we are with regard to that. The under expenditure, on procurement, I think it seems to be a general problem on procurement. I guess we're caught between people want to strictly comply, and as they start to comply, sometimes they don't perform, they don't deliver. And one of the discussions we've been involved in is, what is the cost of compliance? We've got a list of things we have to comply with. Tomorrow I can make a list and say, for me to be able to be a compliant administrator, these are the things I can do. But honorable members, I can also show you That cost of compliance is that I have to forego service delivery. So a balance between service delivery and compliance. And I just want to use an example about the new circular that says, for infrastructure, if we are audited, and I want to put this up front because it's a subject of debate. If you go to a facility to fix it, for everything you do, if you are going to fix the desk, you must sit this desk and issue a completion certificate. If you have to fix the TVs, you must issue a separate completion certificate. So our view is that we think you must fix this room, finish, and when you are done, issue a completion certificate. Versus a completion certificate for every single thing in this room. But for us, it's very compliant, because now we must just focus on doing that. And these are the things that we think are safety service delivery. One is that, yes, there must be compliance, but it must not be at the expense of service delivery. And I can echo, I can make a list and show you some of these things. Another thing, the understanding I've already referred to, that there are very specific things about understanding that the CFO will respond to, and Dr. Philip, particularly with regard to program two. The other point on school health, actually, we've made considerable progress. Honorable members, what we did, we went through basic education, because we have almost like 4 million learners now that is assessed. But assessing them is not enough. We have gone to the district to get their report. Now, part of what Dr. Pili was going to do is to then send audiologists and optometrists to go and treat these young ones, because we know who they are and their school. So the Department of Basic Education has actually been wonderful in working with us, in sharing this data with us. It has been considerable, actually. So we'll just show you what the progress is. The 1,192 clinic committees to be assessed, yes, we're doing them in batches. We will not be able to do all of them. But as we do them, what we wanted to do is that once we assess all of them, we then run training programs for all of them. But even training them and giving them guidance is not enough. I think we must still resolve this issue of whether we give them a stipend for them to be able, because some lose interest, actually, because they have to use their own resources. I think we need to resolve it, and it's one of the things that we'll be discussing. For Honorable Ndatema Panga, KZN oversight, the structure and national versus province. Pardon? I'll hand it over, because remember, each DDG is leading in solving the problems of the province. Malaria. I didn't get the malaria question from Malaria, saying we're waiting for WHO. What? Let me just explain how we're dealing with the malaria. Maybe I'll also respond to the Honorable Masalela question. What has happened over the years? We used to have what we call seasonal workers. They come, they spray. That's all that they do, they spray. And after that, we know that for that season, people are covered. So that is the first thing. The second is that South Africa is one of the, what we call E8 countries, E8 meaning elimination countries. So in the SADC region, there are 8 countries that are supposed to eliminate malaria. And because we're so close, they included us in the 8. So in that process, WHO works with us to check whether are we reaching elimination. So they follow us very closely to assess whether we're reaching elimination. Until you had this outbreak of malaria in Limpopo. I call it outbreak because where malaria is endemic and we control it, it's always expected people will have malaria, but as we spray, we know it's under control. But in Limpopo it was different. It was different because in the Sikukuni area, you know, an area where you never have an outbreak, we're beginning to see cases. So it just said something was not right. So what we did, we then approached Traders last year and asked for money during the part appropriation. And we're giving the money. We allocated to KZN, to Limpopo, and to Mpumalanga. Honorable Fish, what happened is that provinces with the budget fiscal constraint, they cut on the malaria allocation. So when we asked for money for part appropriation, we then said, okay, let's do these things that need to be done. But the allocation was for the following area. There were people who were presenting in our facilities. Those are the people who already had malaria. And our problem is that once they present that malaria, we know we'll lose them. So we said, let's get medication for them. So we bought Coartem. We bought Coartem and make sure that at least facilities had medication. The second one is that we then said we have to spray. We'll make money available for spraying. So the spraying, there's been a, you know, a control is around DDT, you probably are aware. But we said because it's a policy of government that will use DDT, we'll continue to spray. So the supplier had to, I think there was only one supplier in the whole world, we had to wait for that supplier, but we said in the meantime, we still have to come up with preventative measures and address that. So the Limpopo problem is a combination of suitcase malaria, but also the problem with the budget that were cut. But we've been able to raise the money, and Treasurer was responsive with regard to that. For the other areas, I'll ask Dr. Pili to respond, The clinics, honorable members, Mungundlovu and the wall, the community hall, like we say, we've got a couple of those types of examples. Like in other areas, maybe a chief has donated a house, and that house becomes it as a service to the people in the community. Whether the community grows or not, it's still that same house that was donated by a chief a long time ago. So what we've done is gone to those facilities. Like part of this ideal clinic, what it helps us, when we go, we write the infrastructure. There's no space, it must be expanded. And we send the list to the province to say, this time around when you allocate, these are the things you must fix. So Dr.
Thank you, DJ. On the NHI indirect grant, particularly the areas where there is no spending, our intention is to contract in health professionals, and we've advertised for a tender to do that, to be able to get health professionals to come in using universities as well, to be able to be able to deliver services in the areas where we need them. So we're looking for optometrists, for speech and hearing therapists, for dental therapists, in the case of oncology, oncologists, in the case of cataracts, ophthalmologists, etc. When we advertised it, we found that there were more people that were interested than we would ordinarily receive. In fact, the room that we had was not enough. There were no chairs or anything. So there's a lot of interest in those that are in the private sector, not employed by government, to deliver services. They had asked for an extension to be able to comply with our requirements, because many people have not necessarily done work with government before. You know, our requirements are you need to submit a tax certificate, this and that, etc. There's a whole lot of things. So we gave them that extension. So the tender closed last week, and so we would then assess that and then contract these individuals in each of these areas. So you will see quite a quite significant spending, particularly in the oncology area, in school health services, the mental health services as well. On the expending relating to the information systems, here we needed to sign off with CICA a contract on the procurement of the software. So once that's signed off now, there'll be huge expenditure. So you can see quite big expenditure and the CFO indicates on that. On the development of the capitation model, the National Treasury had indicated that they are going to work on the capitation model and will then approve it before we can contract in GPs to actually deliver services in terms of the capitation model. So the other question I think was about the facilities in KZN, and particularly I think the one the chair was talking about. So it's a pretty, I didn't know then what I know now. So I inquired from our colleagues in infrastructure relating particularly to those facilities that you had seen. So the way I understand it is that a number of provinces wanted additional consulting rooms for the GPs. And so the National Department said, let us build quickly these consulting rooms for GPs across various provinces where they require additional space for GPs to consult patients. And so a request was sent to all provinces about how many they need. So the KZN put up their hand as well and indicated where they needed them. And it was a standard design because it needed to be done quickly. And so that's what happened. The agreement always was that if they wanted to use those consulting rooms for GP consultation, that they would have to obviously adapt it in the environment in which they're working. So our infrastructure people dispute the fact that they had said that there must be no waiting area or anything like that, that it was up to the province to then take that over and expand it how they see fit in that environment, because it was a standard structure that was developed and rolled, and a number of facilities have done that across a number of provinces. And they needed to do it quickly so they didn't have, otherwise it would mean having to design each type of structure for the environment, and that would take them much longer. So that's why they took this quick approach of developing a standard consulting structure where the GPs would be able to consult patients with the equipment, etc. So that's the way, but I will go back to KZN and engage them on why they have not built the waiting area, because I think we need to resolve that issue with them.
Thanks, Jay. I think the issue of the unexpense has been dealt with, so I won't labour that. The issue of the procurement systems, which also relates to what the request or spoke about in the plan development grant, I think it's twofold. In many instances, well, there are instances where there are RD contracts, transversal contracts, like RD24, RD2 and so on, where you can pick equipment from a transversalist. What we have seen with our visits particularly is that in many instances provinces at district level do have delegations. They give them a paper delegation and say you can purchase for 200,000. But when they actually want to purchase this, then they have to go through a process of requesting funds from a district office, which goes back to a provincial office, which then has to approve this and comes down. So the turnaround time from when you actually request equipment until it gets approved by a high level and gets broken down back to you takes extremely long. So although there are delegations, the delegations really are just on paper. They're not practical. Secondly, the budget allocated for equipment to some of these institutions is quite low. So if you're not able to pool your total equipment budget, and then by saying bulk or from a central point, you find that the amounts are very small in certain instances. We obviously do kind of add to the equipment budgets through the NTSG and through the HPTDG. And provinces that are able to, especially like Western Cape, for instance, if they want to buy, then there is an existing contract available. Where there's no contract available, it means provinces have to go out and actually procure by themselves. They have to develop specifications, they have to put up evaluation committees, they have to put up adjudication committees. And we have found that some provinces, adjudication committees is quite dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. There are some instances where they don't even sit for like, you know, a few months. At national, you know, until recently we were able to sit at least once a week to get procurement. Okay. So if you can think yourself, if you sit with a billion rand or a couple of billion rand in budget and you're not able to have education committees, your procurement suffers considerably. There's also instances where provinces have to work through the treasury, where the procurement has actually been centralized to a treasury, which makes it even longer the kind of turnaround issues. So that's a myriad of procurement management issues.
Can I just add, in QZN, when we went almost exactly a year ago, what we discovered when we went to some of the hospitals and we wanted to know why there were problems and so on, the problems that come up with a new delegation policy in terms of procurement. For instance, for hospitals, they have put the threshold at 5,000, meaning a CEO could only buy for 5,000. And they also come up with the policy that, you know, the quotation system and so on, they had lowered 500,000 threshold to 30,000. Meaning if you want to buy for more than 30,000, it must go through the provincial system. And so we need to spend time actually reversing all of them.
Mm.
Yeah. In KZN. Just reversing. Meaning they came up with their new PFSA requirements that were not consistent with what is there. So we spent quite a lot of time changing all of that. So we don't know if they're implementing or not. So that was all. In Limpopo, we did that, they reversed all of it. We're again back at square one. She's going to start all over again. So in at least in those two provinces. And Northwest, Ms. Hunter is having a team. They are putting those systems in place as I speak. And we're hoping that they will not be reversed.
So just to say that. So I think, Chair, from what we've seen in the province, the delegations is the way. Second thing is also delegation in terms of appointment of HR. So many provinces don't have an actual delegation, you know, centralized team to CEO to make appointments. We make a recommendation to provinces on how to deal with that. Just to say that treasury, national treasury, there's about three or four RT tenders in the process of being awarded, but the process has been long because it's, you know, more than 18 months ago since we started engaging with the specification committees, evaluation committees, etc. So the process is extremely, extremely cumbersome in that regard. And just lastly from me, on the program 5, you're correct that we haven't mentioned it specifically, but the compensation of employees, it's a golden thread to all. There is some back payments that have to be made on the increments, the ICS, up to April, and we do have some vacancies that are also in the process of being filled. So those are the general comments on compensation. I think that is it.
No, thanks very much, Chair. I'm sure we you want to make follow up. Let's keep it brief. One follow up, not many things. That's one follow up. Honorable James and Honorable Minister.
Thank you, Chair. You know, Chair, when the teacher showed us the video of that hospital, what are inside the hospital, I'm just thinking, are there any consequences for the service providers, namely the contractors in this department, who just show these kind of things? Because I can tell you, if you can go back and check that it has been maintained on a daily basis properly, and again doing shoddy work. You know, they do the shoddy to come back again. Are they going to, is there a way of blacklisting them? Not to do business again with the department, because if you allow them to continue this in and out and playing around, looting from this department, then it doesn't stand up for. Doesn't the very goal that it's supposed to say. There was a control group, I think that's all I said.
What can we say?
Thank you, Chair. Whoever is dealing with Gauteng, there is a clinic that is closed for the simple reason that you remember the clinic of the containers, where it is now. They have closed it because the old nurse who was doing that is retired, and the old nurse who was helping her, she can't do anything because she just do preventatives. So now when they go to the clinic and she can't do this, so what the hell are you doing here for if you can't help us? And they wanted to beat her up, she ran away. And the clinic is closed. and the province is not helpful because they've not been able to merge those two stands to make it one in order to build a CHC. So we are asking for intervention. Thank you.
No, thanks very much. Well, the other thing that I thought I was going to raise is a matter that maybe we need to assist us with. Is it possible to get an audit of all the primary healthcare facilities in the country so that we're able to understand in terms of infrastructure? So that we know which get surprises. In case you've got that picture, we know there's this problem. And then, if possible, then provinces must then indicate to you what plans are they putting in place to replace those structures and put proper health, primary health facilities.
I think that could be actually the Monday, they showed me a picture. It was different. Clean iron oil. And of course there were machines that were American too. But if you ask the question, that what is this behavior? How come you we've got multiple problems. How come you've got this laundry? I mean, in the end, that is silent. Monday. And then you go to another province, they've got brand new cities. It's packed. They're not going to do it. They locked it away. So we ask, but why did they lock it away? They think it's because when they release it, they're not going to get it back.
Yeah,
they're going to send them old.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what they
told us. Yes.
Okay.
So the problems differ from. So those are the things that we say, some things are solvable. They don't need money. You know, some are just about management. And management is not just in a hospital only, it's a different level. Whether in the district, whether you know, in the provincial office and so on. So these are the things. And when we meet, we discuss these things, we raise these things, but some of them seem to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. Thank you, Chair.
No, thanks very much, colleagues. We've come to the end of the discussion around this report. I'm glad, Titi, that you've detected this issue of the inspections, where you send the team, it comes with a good report. But it was worrying us when the Office of the Health Compliance was presenting a report. Vis-a-vis what we're being told, then we realize, man, why there's no correlation. The health compliance says, no, this facility is at this stage. The report internal says, no, they are 80-90% doing very well. The Office of the Health says, put them at 50-45. What is it? You see? So we didn't understand what is the story. Now we realize that because the Office of the Health Commission doesn't announce the results.
Mm-hmm.
and this one is announced as planned. So that's what happened. And that's where the problem lies. So I'm glad that you've already detected that. And you will be able then to see how best then to address it so that you get the correct result. Well, I don't know why they're doing that. Who do they want to please? Because this system is to assist them. It's not to find the wrong at them. It's to find whether the challenge is already given. I'm not sure whether they find it. We told no, if you perform well, maybe you get bonuses. I don't know. maybe that's why they then hang it in a minute that they were hanging it. But thanks very much, we'll get the report, we'll hand it over to the sister, and then we'll be able to provide us accordingly. And then I'm not sure how long will it take you to give us that status report of the primary care in terms of infrastructure, which is so that we're able to have a picture as well. If it's easy to find, it's fine. If it's going to take some time, but you've got your teams on the ground already,
mm-hmm.
Allocated, so it should not be much of a problem. But don't rely too much on what provinces are telling you. because once you do that, you will be in trouble. I know as a premier who went to an outreach program, and then he stood up in Mpumalanga and said, yeah, here we've built a clinic, you see. Good quality clinic, there we've built it, that's what delivery. Then one comrade comes and said, where you're standing is where it's supposed to be. She was reading a report given to him. You see? So those are the things that, so we must make sure that we just created double checking mechanisms independent from provinces in whatsoever they gave us. Otherwise, you will be the one that will seem to be misleading while you are just getting information from provinces. I learned this from when we came to them, that if the MEC said knows that the clinic was closed, it means if we have asked him about that clinic, we'll say that clinic doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So that's the issue. Yeah. So generally, that's the thing that we must take into consideration. Thanks very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Even so on.